The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, every Friday we invite somebody into Studio 10 and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. And today's the turn of Martin King.
Good afternoon.
I don't have to explain who you are, Martin King, because you are Martin King.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that.
Yeah, because you've been around for so long. You're part of, you know, the fabric of Irish society.
Well, that's... Wow.
But you are.
Am I getting an award?
No, you're not. No, you're not.
No, I'm not getting the freedom of anywhere. No.
You're just guiding us through the soundtrack to your life. That's what you're doing today.
Okay, fair enough.
And thanks so much for coming in. And we'd asked you a lot over the last couple of years to come in on a Friday and do this because we were watching the telly and we thought, well, it doesn't work on a Friday evening on the 6 o'clock show or the 7 o'clock show as it was. He might have time to come in and talk to us.
Yeah.
But you had other business to do.
I did. And it was my apology as well when I was first asked. And I was delighted that you asked me. But Friday afternoons, like you said, I wasn't on the TV. I did the radio in the morning and I would go to the school, collect my youngest son, and we go straight to a nursing home in Santry, and I'd spend Friday afternoons with my mum and dad.
Right.
And that was what we did every week, and unfortunately, soundtrack was on in the afternoon. And listen, I'm happy to be here today.
Yeah.
Do you know what? In a roundabout way, in a funny, I wish I was still making that journey, but it's
and your mum and dad were both of them in the same...
Yeah.
Nursing home, right.
Yeah, my dad went in there first and then my mum soon followed. And they had their own place in there. And, you know, they enjoyed that. My mum had dementia. So at the best of times, she didn't know who she was or where she... Well, she knew who she was, but she didn't know where she was.
Mm.
And but there were times when she would get these bouts of reality, and that they were sweet times for my dad. Because they could sit down and they could chat and they would talk about old times and, you know, she'd drift again.
Yeah.
It's the sad thing about dementia. But I remember one afternoon, my dad was watching, we used to get him these box sets and he had access to a few movie channels and he was watching this old movie and Victor Mature was in the movie. And my mum leaned over to me and she said, "What's Victor Mature doing in our house?"
You see, there are moments of humour there,
aren't
there?
Lovely moments of humour. And I looked at one and I said, he's only calling in to collect something. He'll be gone in a minute.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to go with it.
Because that's the suggestion, that they always suggest that you play along with the person's reality.
And you know what? That's a very hard thing to do for quite a while because, you know, the thing about Alzheimer's and dementia is that you're grieving for so long because you've lost the person you knew. And sometimes it took me a little while to get around that because I would always want to bring her back to reality. But of course she didn't. She was in her happy place and she was back to being a child again. And she thought that she spent a lot of time in her youth in hospital and she thought, "I'm in hospital, but I'm going to be going back to school next week." Yeah. And she'd ask, "Are you here to bring me home?" And we just have to get the doctors to sign off and then we'll be on our way.
And some she'd have lucid moments where she'd know you were Martin.
Do you know what? In the lead up to her last Christmas with us, I went in one day and she... I think all mothers are famous for their Christmas puddings. And I went in to her and said, "Look, Mum, you're coming to me Christmas Day, you and Dad. So we need to make a pudding. And we want to make as close to what you make as possible." And so what are the ingredients? And she just went bum, 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 all the way down to the very end and listed them all off.
Yeah.
But if I was to ask her 5 minutes later or something, she thinks she was somewhere else.
And so that was 2018 was the last Christmas you had.
2018.
With both your parents?
Both of them, yeah. They came to our house.
Did you take pictures?
Loads of them. Yeah. And there's videos too. And
great.
We didn't know that was going to be the last.
No.
So, but yeah, there's some good videos and we're singing and yeah, a lot of good memories.
So last year was a tough year for you. Your dad died first.
Yeah.
And you didn't expect that. You thought, I suppose, if you were predicting, not that you do, but that your mum would have gone first.
Yeah. Well, she actually kicked the year off with getting a bad dose of flu, which became swine flu. And we were told, "Look, you're going to see a rapid
decline
here." So when she went back to the nursing home, my dad kind of looked at her and he said to my brother, "She looks like a corpse, son." And he realised that time was running out and he kind of gave in. To be perfectly honest with you. And it wasn't until after he had passed away that, because we were back in the nursing home because my mum was still there, that the staff were saying that he'd call us into the room and ask, can you just open the window? And he said, it was like a February day or a March day, and it was cold. In the end, he took a slight turn. He got pneumonia and was taken off to Beaumont on Good Friday. And by Easter, in Easter Monday, he just slipped away.
Right.
We were expecting to bring him back to the home on Tuesday. And then we got a call, where are you? You need to get here quick.
And then how long after did your mother die?
4 weeks.
4 weeks.
Literally 4 weeks and a day later. He was 4 weeks gone when we got the call. And we all rushed off, and a day later off she popped.
Your mum had no realisation that your dad had died.
Yeah, and you know what? That kind of beats us up as well.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Because it beats me up. Although we were told not to tell her because of Alzheimer's and dementia. You can tell them something that is traumatic. Like, I couldn't tell my mother. She was talking about her parents. I couldn't say, listen, Nanny and Granddad are gone.
Yeah.
Because she would have been at first stage grief. And we were told, you can't tell her that your dad has passed away, because she'll go to first stage grief, then she'll forget about it, and then she'll realise, oh, he's gone, and she'll be back at that.
It'll reoccur, yeah.
Over and over and over again. So they said, you can't tell her. And that cut me up, because on the day of my dad's funeral, we actually had to drive by the nursing home to get out to where the service was taking place. And yeah, we were all talking, and when we got
there, your mum was there in the nursing home. But you were all off. We were all grieving your dad.
And like, he was the love of our life, and they were crazy about each other.
Yeah.
And sadly, she wasn't aware of it, but we were told by the people who know better not to tell her.
Right, well we started at the end there. Let's go back to the beginning then. So you were born in the Rotunda in 1963.
Yes.
To Martin and Christina.
Yes.
Who we've just been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did they meet, your parents?
Great story. They met in the Mansion House. Now, when I was talking to Niamh, she thought that this was like a big posh dinner dance or something. But no, the Mansion House was open for dances every weekend. And my dad was actually training to be a Jesuit monk. And he was out in Milltown. And he took some days away to go back to see his mother. And while he was doing that, his friend called around and said, look, why don't we go out for a dance? We'll go out tonight. And he said, yeah. So tripped up the road to the Mansion House because they were on Dorset Street. And they were in there on the dance floor just kind of having a look around. And all of a sudden, my dad got a bang of a sweet.
A bang of a sweet.
Yes. And he thought, he picked it up off the floor, and then he got a bang of another one. And when he looked up onto the balcony, there was this girl there. And she was throwing some sweets down to get his attention.
Right. And, but he was going to be married to her lord.
Yes,
that was the plan.
That was the plan. And of course, they got talking to each other, and my mum's sister was with her too. My dad said, listen, he said, I'm back out to Milltown on Monday. You know, so and he said, you're going to walk the girl home. And my dad said, I can't. I said, come on, you know what my path is. And he said, well, I'm telling you now, Boiler, if you don't walk her home, I will.
Right.
So he did. And my dad's friend walked her home and asked her out. And she said, look, it's your friend I'm interested in. So he went back and he went around to my dad on Sunday and he said, listen, it's not me she's interested in. She's got her eye on you. And he was starting to question whether or not he would continue with his training and eventually become a Jesuit monk. He questioned that. And eventually he thought, I'm going to follow my heart. And I've met a girl and I'm falling for her. So
right.
He left, and I'm kind of glad he did.
Well, you wouldn't be sitting here.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, we don't know that, but there you go. So how long was the courtship, do you know?
It went on for 4 years.
Right.
And they married in 1962, February 1962. And then I came along in the following January.
And you're christened Martin Boyle.
Yes.
We'll get to Martin King in a moment, but we'll just leave that there. So just in case you say Boyle along the way, so people aren't confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned, is it Dorset Street or Dorset Street?
This is a big bone of contention.
Yeah, well, which is it?
People who live in and around the area will say, oh, it's definitely Dorset Street.
Right.
And the reason they don't call it Dorset Street is to let the people across the pond know that they're in Dublin and we pronounce it differently. That's what I was told.
All right.
Yeah.
Because there's Dorset in England.
Yeah.
So it's Dorset Street.
Dorset Street.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's, you spent your first 18 months.
Yeah, living. It was in a tenement building, which is now a block of flats. And the building was eventually condemned, so they were looking to pull it down. So they moved us out to a place called Edenmore, which was a new housing scheme set up in the North County, as it was.
Yeah, sort of a county council estate.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like a lot of people are talking about it now because of the housing crisis, and that's where, and they were brand new estates,
brand new houses, and beyond
built on greenfield sites. Yeah.
And we had the a regular bus route and all those things that they promised would be there were there.
Yeah.
That's where I grew up.
You were the eldest, and then how many came along after you?
Four girls and one boy. So I got four sisters, Bernie, Claire, Christine and Etna. They're twins, and my brother Paul.
Right, so a busy enough house.
It was a very busy house, yeah. And tough enough because, of course, my mom grew up in Devil Airs Island, so she was one of those girls who, going off to get married, had to give up her job to make room for the next single girl looking for a position somewhere. So,
what's your first living memory?
My first memory is, I don't remember anything from Dorset.
No, well, I'd be surprised
but
if you did.
I think it's on a little three-wheeler bike in the garden in Edenmore, and my sister was on a swing, and it was one of these swings that my dad could dig into the ground, but at the end of the day, pull up out of the ground and bring it back into the house and put it away. And that's my first memory, just being on that bike.
A tricycle, these
little tricycle. Yeah.
You don't see tricycles around much now.
Yeah. And this was a tiny little one.
Yeah.
Being the eldest, you see, I think I got a bit spoiled, and I would get the tricycles and the rocking horses, and they'd be passed down.
So they'd get your hand-me-downs.
Kind of.
Right, we'll go to our first clip then, and we'll play this in, and you can tell us about it afterwards.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the
city. Petula Clark and Downtown.
Yeah.
So that was released in 1964. You were only one or thereabouts.
And really getting my voice. And it was a song that was on the radio all the time. And my mum told me that that was the first song I ever sang.
All right.
But all I could ever sing was down, 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 down. I'm a smurf in a buggy, in a pram. And it's on the radio. She's singing it. And I'm joining in with her.
Lovely song.
Yeah, lovely. I always thought she was singing about Henry Street as well.
Right.
Because that's where my mom went to do her shopping.
So, and that was downtown to you?
That was downtown to me.
I always thought
it's Arnott's, it's Roach's Stores, it's definitely Henry Street in Dublin. It has to be.
Yeah.
Where else would she be singing about, I thought?
And I'd say it was more radio than television then in the early days, was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Radio and, yeah. It was chiefly the radio. Like we lived in one channel land at that stage, so the TV didn't go on till 5 o'clock. And my mother was very smart because she'd sit us, if it was a rainy day, if it wasn't raining, we were out in the street. But if it was a rainy day, she'd sit us in front of the TV and say, watch the test card and tell me if anything comes on. And so that kept us busy because we all felt we're doing a job for Mum. Don't move until you see something.
More innocent times, Martin.
Yeah, much innocent.
You're entertained by a test card. Right, this will spark a memory of...
Oh, yes. That does bring me back, right.
So where are you now?
Okay, I'm late for school. That's what that is. I am the Kennedys of Castle Ross, yes.
Yeah.
That was at a time when you went home for your dinner from school. We finished at 12:30. You went, it was a 15-minute walk back to the house, 10-minute run. You got your dinner. We got dinner in the middle of the day. And if the Kennedys of Castle Ross came on the radio, my mother would say, you're going to be late for school. Get out.
Get out the door.
And back up the road. And it kind of was defeating the purpose of having your dinner in the middle of the day because you ran back to school, was back up in your neck. You ate it again as you were going into the classroom.
That ran, it started in April 1955.
Yeah.
And it ran until 1975.
Wow.
It was a radio drama.
Yes. The BBC had the Archers. Why can't we have one as well? So yeah, it was ours.
And what was the one that followed that? Harbour something?
Harbour Hotel.
Harbour Hotel. Yeah. There you go. There you go. What sort of child were you?
Because my mum and dad were good Catholics, and they were producing quite a few of us, and there were a couple that my mum lost as well. Yeah. I was kind of had to be the responsible one. I was the go-getter. Get me a nappy. Get me a bottle. Get me the soother. Get me. So I was the get me.
Right.
So keep an eye on your brother. I have to go up the road to the shop. Keep an eye on your sister. So yeah.
It often happens though that the eldest is sort of the health and safety officer in a house, isn't it? You see it. No, it is. No, because whatever it is, and then because your parents were different to you because you were the first.
Yes.
They were doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
They were a bit more cautious around you.
Yeah.
And like a sponge, you absorb that.
Yeah, yeah. By the time they got to the fourth or fifth, if he falls down the stairs, he'll only do it once.
Yeah. That sort of thing.
I remember my dad actually, when I started having kids, saying, look, the best thing you can do is whatever about walking and whatever about talking, teach them how to get up and down the stairs.
Right. And good advice.
Yeah. He said, even if they have to lie on their belly and just slide down the stairs.
Yeah. What did your dad do? You said that your mum gave up work when she got married. What did your dad do?
Well, my dad, after leaving the Jesuits because he met my mum, he had to leave school after primary because you paid to go to secondary school. And that's why he joined the Jesuits, because he wanted to further his education. He wanted to learn more. He had a great, great thirst for knowledge. And he spent most of his free time in libraries. So he had no qualifications. So he met my mum. They wanted to marry. So it was a case of, I need a job. So he took a job with what was then the P&T.
Uh-huh. Post and Telegraph.
Yeah, yeah. And he was down in the Central Sorting Office, which was in Dublin in Sheriff Street at that time. And that was his job. He worked in the sorting office. And then they moved him up into customs, where he would have to open packages and just, you know, check them to make sure they were
contraband
okay.
Stuff.
Yeah.
The fact that he was going to be a Jesuit would suggest to me that he's a certain type of man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he certainly believed in God, but he questioned all, like he would seriously question God as well. And, you know, is Catholicism the right one? Or maybe it's not. So we grew up in a household where we would have Jehovah Witnesses in, and he would sit down and he would discuss scripture and he'd discuss the Bible with them. We would have Hare Krishnas in. He said, he loved the Bob Hope line, where Bob was asked once, you did a fundraiser for Hare Krishnas, and he said, I'm not going to risk the afterlife on a technicality. So he would quote that line not very often. But he wanted to know more, and he wanted to know what other people believed, because he said, look, we're all on the same planet.
Yeah.
We're all breathing the same air.
He sounds like a lovely man. So when you got a telly, this would have been on it at one stage or another.
HR Puff and Stuff. Push your bend when things get rough. HR Puff and Stuff. Can't do a little because you can't do enough.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do. We're of the same vintage. You're slightly older than me.
Only slightly.
Only slightly, yeah. But you look better.
Yeah. Daily struggle.
So first episode was 1969, and it only ran for a year.
Yeah, but it felt longer.
Yes,
it did. It was one of the very few children's programmes that was on RTE. Mm. And of course, Jack Wilde, who was the breakout star from Oliver, which was in 1968, they were trying to find a vehicle for him after he played the Artful Dodger. We all fell in love with Jack Wilde. So they found a slot for him on this. And you remember the story, don't you?
Here's the synopsis. I'll read it out to him. Mayor H.R. Puff and Stuff and the other residents of Living Island tried to help young Jimmy,
who's
played by him, shipwrecked and led to their island, escape the evil clutches of Witchy Poo, zany witch who wants to steal Jimmy's talking flute for her collection of magical objects. But even as Jimmy tries to keep his talking flute out of Witchy Poo's evil grasp, he's also trying to find his way back home.
Yeah, he was caught shipwrecked, like you said.
Yeah.
And it was years later when I remember talking about programmes we watched when we were kids, and I thought that was the gag that was in there for the adults.
The talking flute?
Yes.
I'd say there was drugs involved in that, in the writing of that.
Well, we heard about the magic roundabout and other such things.
I don't think it was ever proven, Martin. Yeah,
I know, but there was always stuff in there for the grown-ups just to put a wry smile on
their face.
But we watched TV as a family, and that was one of the programmes that that myself, my brother and my sisters watched.
Okay, so you're hitting your teen years in the mid-70s.
Yes.
Yeah. What sort of a teenager? Were you still a sort of a health and safety officer? Or
kind of sort of, but they were starting to let me loose.
Right.
So I was getting to go to school dances and things like that. And I was pretty good in school until I got to about 14 or 15. But yeah, I was good in school.
What happened when you hit 14, 15?
I became a teenager. So I started noticing girls and, you know, I wanted to dance, go out to dances more often. And I love my sport. Absolutely love sport. Love football. Loved soccer. So,
and did you play?
I played Gaelic in the school, and I played soccer for St Anthony's in Raheny.
Right, and your dad would have loved that.
My dad was keener on me to play Gaelic football,
right?
Because he, growing up on Dorset Street, like he at Croke Park just down the road, and he would go to Croke Park to watch anybody playing. He loved the Mayo team of the 50s. He used to go and watch them play because he thought they played a great brand of football. His dad, who he lost when he was 11, he was from Derry. So as I was growing up, we'd go to matches involving Derry, but mostly, of course, involving Dublin.
Yeah. Yeah, remind me to get you to tell the story about Padre Pio before we leave, because that's a great story as well. So as a teenager, slightly distracted, took your eye off the academic ball, so to speak.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. And when did, what age were you when you left school?
Well, what happened was my dad had a breakdown.
Right.
And I was 15 at the time.
Breakdown is sort of a...
Yeah, he had a nervous breakdown.
A nervous breakdown, right.
What
did you understand of it back in the day?
I just arrived home one day after being in school, and I'd stayed late to do homework. And I get in to be told, look, your dad's gone to hospital. And I said, what's wrong with him? And naturally, it's a fear. And I was told, look, he needs some help.
Right.
And he'd gone off because, he had shaved his head as a call for help. And I put it down to the fact that he was doing a job to provide for us, but he could have done another job, and he didn't have the qualifications to do the job that he probably would have liked to have done. And he had that breakdown. So at 15, and I'm then out of school because it's the end of the school term within a couple of days, I thought, I have to get a job.
You're the breadwinner. Yeah,
I'm the eldest. I'm now the man in the house. But as my mum said, said to me years later, you're 15. You were 15 when you tried to take this on. It wasn't up to you to do that. So I was listening to a pirate station, and I wrote to them because I was listening to them every day. And I asked for a summer job, and I got a letter back saying, come on in. So I went into a radio station and start answering phones and making tea and opening doors. And I was again the get me.
You're the get me guy. Yeah.
But they got me to, they said, look, so you're free for the summer. Yeah, we've nobody here to work nights. So I wound up working the graveyard shift, making tea and whatever.
And then Martin Boyle became Martin King. We'll hear that story after a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And Martin King is guiding us through the soundtrack to his life. Martin is the king of the weather, says Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron.
You'll never get away from the weather, will you?
No, and I do very little of it now. The focus is solely on the 6 o'clock shows.
Of course.
But I still do one a day.
There you go. Martin is an absolute gentleman. 21st of June 1991, our family won 2,000. Would have been pounds or euro on 98 FM cash call.
Yeah, punts.
Yeah, 29 pence and bonus word up the Dubs. Great memories. Thanks, Martin, Paddy. That all makes sense to you. So when did Martin Boyle become Martin King?
When I was working in that radio station, the Big D, a pirate station, and I was the get me guy. And what happened was, did you work in pirate radio yourself?
Down the country.
Yeah.
It wasn't WKRC and KLB.
I remember them.
Radio of Winter Kildare. Yeah, I did, but they weren't on the same scale as Dublin stations at all.
It was still providing a service.
Yeah.
But you'd be aware that there were guys and girls working in there who had to go to work the next day.
Yeah.
So it was the middle of the night, and some guy didn't show up. And the guy who was on said, I have to go. I have to be in work at 9 o'clock. And I said, well, what do we do? And he said, well, we can't go off the air. He said, so in about 10 minutes, you're on. I can't go on the radio. I'm 15. And he said, well, you're on in 10 minutes. He said, well, I call you. And I said, oh, you can't call me by my own. I'm called after my dad. You can't call me Martin Boyle because my dad works in the P&T, and they were told that if, especially when my dad heard I was working here, he said, "Saw, son, please don't go on the radio." Because they were told if any staff members are discovered to be working at one of these illegal radio stations or have relatives working at one of these illegal radio stations, they're under the threat of suspension or possible dismissal.
Right.
So I said, keep my first name, but don't call me by
Martin Boyle.
No, please don't. Right. So he said, "All right, okay. Well, I call you." I said, "I don't know." He said, "Who are your heroes?" And I said, "Muhammad Ali." He said, "I can't call you Martin Ali." And I, "Johan Cruyff."
Martin Cruyff.
Anybody else? And I said, "Well, Martin Luther King." And he said, "Okay." And he just turned on the microphone. He said, "Martin King is on in a few minutes."
And that's it.
That was it.
Right, there was no big thought process, names on the board, like that one, don't like that one, no, just that.
There was no brainstorming, no focus group. It just, who are your heroes? And I said Martin Luther King. And after that, I grew up, because my dad gave me the nickname Bubbles, because I would drink a bottle when I was a baby, apparently, right. Blow bubbles. And after that, once I went on the radio, my friends started calling me Luther.
Because, yeah.
So that's how I became Martin.
So 15.
15, yeah, I know, crazy.
And when did you get your first pay packet for doing what you've done ever since?
I was very fortunate in that the man who owned the radio station was driving home from a gig, and he came in the next night to see me, and he said, "Was that you on the radio last night?" And I said, "Yeah, no, he didn't show up." I can't remember the name of the man who didn't show up. He said, "He didn't show up, and I had no choice." He says, "Right." He said, "How'd you like to do a programme once a week?" And that was it. And off I went.
Right.
And I think I got £15 a week.
Was there any aspiration there?
I wanted to be a football commentator.
Oh, right. That's what you wanted
because
to be about.
I had subbuteo as a child.
Yeah.
And you got to flick to kick, right?
Yes, yeah.
And I used to, as I was playing the game, I would commentate on the game.
Right.
And I'd be listening to Brian Moore on a Sunday afternoon on the big match.
That's what you wanted to do.
But I didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And I just fell into radio by accident.
Okay. Here's a song. Ain't Too Proud to Beg, The Temptations.
Oh, what a song. Great song.
Two middle-aged men. What a song.
But it is a great song.
It is a great song.
Yeah. Do you say sympathy or symphony? That opening line. Because the amount of people who make the mistake.
What is it?
If I have to beg and plead for your symphony.
It's sympathy, is it? Sympathy. Yeah. I would imagine.
My next door neighbour. His brother had a great record collection, but he was mad about Motown. So that's what I grew up listening to. That I grew up listening to Elvis. My cousins listened to Elvis.
Where were you when Elvis died?
I was on a holiday in the Isle of Man.
Right.
And I distinctly remember.
It was.
We all remember.
August 16, 1977.
Yeah.
It was a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And Elvis Presley was scheduled to fly out of Memphis to begin another tour. And his manager, Ginger Alden.
Was she the girlfriend?
Was it? Oh, so was she the girlfriend, was she? Ginger Alden discovered. Well, let's have a listen to this report. Anyway, let's have a listen to this report.
Good evening. Elvis Presley died today. He was 42. Apparently, it was a heart attack. He was found at his home in Memphis, not breathing. His road manager tried to revive him. He failed. A hospital tried to revive him. It failed. His doctor pronounced him dead at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
You're right, that was his girlfriend. That's his road manager tried to revive him, yeah.
I think, wasn't it? Joe Esposito was the road manager, I think. Yeah, we were on a holiday in the Isle of Man. That's where we went every year. We went and we were sitting down in the television room in a bed and breakfast called the Sun Court, and the TV was on. It was BBC Two, and the news came on and Elvis's picture was on it. And my sister said, "He's dead."
And just like that, he's dead. And they said, no, he's not. They're going to say he's going to come to Europe. He's going to come to Ireland. He's going to come. He's going to do a concert. That's what they're saying. And next, I think it was Robert Dougal was the newsreader. And he said, Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll, has died at age 42. So I said, you killed him, to my sister.
Right. You exited. You exited.
That only happened in the last 60 seconds.
So you'll appreciate this. We have to rush through this to get to 4 o'clock on time. Because time waits for no man, as you well know.
Yes.
I want to play this and you can tell me the significance of it.
Well, a year of delay to Carja. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the All-Ireland football final of 1974 between Galway and Dublin.
All the dogs are back, the dogs are back. Let the railway and go, Bobby. Cos Hill 16 has never seen the lights
of Heffo's army. Yeah. I'm embarrassed as a Kildare man knowing the words to that song, but I do. There you go. Yeah.
Look, I'm lucky to be of a vintage that saw the two great Dublin teams, the one that we have right now and that team in the 70s, and the great Kerry team and the great Kilkenny team, Kilkenny hurling team. But yeah, being a kid in the 70s, and I remember my dad nuts about GAA. We used to go and watch them, as my brother said, when they wore white shorts. So and they weren't winning anything. And then 74, it all changed. And I remember going to the final and asking my dad, why aren't we on the hill? And he said, if you're on the hill, you can't see the hill.
Listen, I know, because it's less than a year since your dad died, so it's still quite raw. I'll just give you a minute there. We'll take an ad break. We'll get that in before 4 o'clock, because I have one more story I want to hear about your dad, and that's the Padre Pio story, okay. And we'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Martin in Clontarf has been on. Martin King, lovely chat with Martin King. I'm a similar age from Dublin's north side, and it's very nice to hear someone speak so lovingly about his parents. Please say hello to Martin. I'm Hugo Lloyd. He was a good friend of my brother, a great broadcaster. Regards, Hugo. Yeah. There you go. And say hello to Martin King. It's good to hear him on your show. I remember Martin from Sloopy Days, my Sloopy Days in the early 80s. That was a nightclub, wasn't it?
That was a brilliant nightclub in Fleet Street. Yeah. Two dance floors, and then upstairs a live band was on, and then up again was a video room and games room.
Wow.
Huge.
I went to school with Martin's brother Paul. Great family, brilliant sense of humour. You have 30 seconds to tell the Padre Pio story.
Okay, when my dad joined the Jesuits, they're all given a mentor.
Right.
And he was given a mentor. And it was, as we discovered, Padre Pio.
Right.
And because he, of course, was a monk. He was retired, and he was my dad's mentor. And he would write to him to check to see how he was getting on. And my dad would write to him. And
was he, when he was having the crisis about whether he should stay in or go off and marry your mother,
he wrote to Padre Pio and said, look, this
But he didn't know he was, the, he was Padre, well, he, was he famous at that stage?
He just always referred to him as Brother Pio.
Oh, brother, right.
And he wrote to him and told him about this. And the reply he got back was, follow your heart. He said, because God will always go with you.
Right.
And so he did. And he said, let me know when they're getting married. So he did. He said, I'm going to marry her February 24th. And then this parcel arrived, and it was a book. And it was to Martin and Christina, Happiness Always. Then my dad and mum told me what was written on it. And he sent this book.
Right, Padre Pio. There you go.
So it was very special.
Yeah, well, we started remembering your mum and dad, and we finished remembering your mum and dad. Martin, I really enjoyed that. Thanks so much.
No, listen. Yeah.
6 o'clock show, Monday to Thursday, and then you're on cue. When?
Tomorrow morning at 11.
Tomorrow morning at 11. Okay. Great. Martin Boyle, now known as Martin King.